we discussed the sugya of chole b'shabbos, so we have to always be careful in terms of defining what precisely is a chole. We're going to see as the shiur develops that there are really very, very different categories of to extent of what a person is considered to be a chole on Shabbos, which you're going to have all the differences in the world in terms of what would be permissible to be done for such a person. So we begin a shiur with a sense the highest level of chole, in a sense the best halakhic category of chole, probably the worst medical category of chole, and that's of course the chole sheyesh b'sakana. A person whose life is in danger. So here the Mishnah is quite clear in the end of Maseches Yom, but other places in Shas, that when we're dealing with the Chole Sheyesh B'Sakana, so basically everything is permissible. Kol Tarkul is Nimches B'Pnei Chole Sheyesh B'Sakana, with a few exceptions of Avodah Zarah, Gibur Raish, Bechazdom, we're not going to talk about that now. But by and large, for the purposes of Shabbos, which is our primary discussion, Yom Kippur, etc., the Chol Sasuro, so the Halacha is that Pikuach Nefesh overrides everything. It derives from a series of Psukim. The pasuk that we're most familiar with is the pasuk v'chay behem v'lo shiyamus behem. That's only one of the makayrus. The Gemara has 5-6 other makayrus, but this in the end of Maseches Yom. That's an absolute given. That's not a shayla. That a chole sheyesh b'sakana, one is doiche in the sense kol tarakula. However, notwithstanding the fact that one is doiche kol tarakula, one can raise a fundamental question as to what the nature of this halacha is. The Gemara tells us in the beginning of Maseches Yom and Avod that very often we have conflicts within the world of halacha. Sometimes the Torah says you're not allowed to do such and such. And then the same Torah, Kadosh, says to do such and such. And sometimes the two contradict each other. So it's in life. Very often you have that. You have things that contradict each other. So you have to figure out what to do. So there are klalim in the Torah. What do you do when you have two different mitzvahs where in one direction the Rebbe Shalom is telling you to do one thing, in the other direction is telling you to do something else? So the Gemara Yuma Davav discusses what's the din when you have a korban tzibur that has to be brought. The only problem is that people are tamei, the Quranim are tamei. So what do you do? Is korban tzibur doich etumah? Is korban tzibur not doich etumah? So the Gemara derives from the pasuk that yes, that korban in the hierarchy of halacha, korban tzibur is more important than tumah. So the Gemara raises a very, very long v'shashayla. If it wouldn't be for a Gemara, I would have thought it's like an achareinish hakira. But it's a Gemara. It's a beferish Gemara. What's the nature of this halacha that you bring a korban tzibur on in the state of tumah? Is this what's called dechuya, or is this what's called chutra? What's the difference between the two? Dechuya means that the isra is still b'mkayma eime. It's still considered to be an isra of tumah. The Torah says, nebuch, you have to do the isra of tumah, but it's still called the violation of tumas hamikdash. So, okay, you have to do what you have to do. You don't have to clap b'chayt for doing it, but still, you should be aware of the fact that what you're doing is still a quote-unquote ma'isa veira. Then the Gemara presents, maybe the nature of the din that a korban tzibur is overrides tumah is not b'teres d'chulia, that the isra is b'mkayma emet, but it's b'teres chutra, that it's not considered to be an aver in the situation of a korban tzibur, so it's not considered to be tumah. The whole isra of tumah is lo ne'amar in such a situation. So again, a very lomdisha, a seemingly academic hakira, is it b'teres d'chulia, is it b'teres chutra? My nafkamina. The end of the day, you have to do it. The end of the day, you don't call machay for doing it. So what's the nafkamina? So the Gemara says the nafkamina is how much you have to avoid doing it. So what if you have two kohanim in front of you? One kain is tamei, one kain is tahar. So if you hold that tumah is dechuya b'tzibur, then you have no right to use the kain that's tamei. You have to use the kain that's tahar. But if you hold that tumah is chutra b'tzibur, so it's het gomer. So even the kain is tamei, apidin is not tamei. The tumah doesn't apply. It's considered to be het gomer, tumah chutra b'tzibur. So that's the presentation, that's the sugya that appears in Tavav. So the Rishonim borrow that sugya from tumah and tzibur in the sugya pikuach nefesh as well. So here we have this halacha that pikuach nefesh overrides Shabbos. So you have in one hand the Torah says losasakum halacha, and the same Torah says b'chay behem v'lo shiyamus behem. So how do those two things jive together? So the Torah tells us the hierarchy is that pikuach nefesh is more important than Shabbos. So yesh lachkor, what's the nature of this din that pikuach nefesh is deicha Shabbos? Is it deicha b'tarez dechuya? Means it's still called an act of chilul Shabbos. Your mamash and mechal Shabbos deraisa, but the Torah says nebuch, you have to do it. It's b'tarez dechuya, or is it b'tarez hutra? That it's not Shabbos. It's mamash like Tuesday today when I do malacha for a chayla sheish b'sakona. It's not considered to be a ma'aser of chilul Shabbos b'chlamas, but b'tarez hutra. So although the Gemara in Yuma raises the two possibilities vis-a-vis the sugya of tuma. In the sugya of Shabbos, the Gemara never raises it explicitly. The Rishonim already discuss it, but the Gemara never touches, at least directly, on this. So, what should the obvious nafkamina be? The most important nafkamina ladina should be this shiloh. The same way the Gemara says in Yuma, the nafkamina ladina is how much you have to avoid it. That should be the same shiloh. You have a chayla. You have a chayla sheyesh b'sakana in Shabbos. So we have to take care of the chayla. How much do we have to be concerned with Chilul Shabbos? Do we have to bend over backwards and create a whole institute of Tzomet and all kind of things to finagle, to do things in a way that wouldn't be Chilul Shabbos deraisa? We mechuyav to do that. Or do we say, no, it's Tuesday today. So on Tuesday, when I take care of Chalim on Tuesday, I don't use gramophones on Tuesday. I don't use grandma operating rooms on Tuesday. I do regular things on Tuesday. So on Shabbos, I can do things in a normal fashion as well. There's no reason to bend over backwards to avoid Chilul Shabbos, because it's not Chilul Shabbos. It's Tuesday today. So what's the deal? So this is a big machlekes in Rishonim, and it all revolves around the sugya that appears in Masechet Shabbos in the context of a yoledes. One of the examples of a chedesh esh b'seklam is a woman who's in labor. So the Gemara says that if a woman who's in labor, sometimes you need some kind of oil, lubricant to help the woman, whatever a process of labor is, so you need some oil. It happens to be there's no oil around. The only oil happens to be across the street, and you have to get it, and there's no eruv. So how are you going to get the oil? So it's some kind of a tzarech of pikuach nefesh. So the Gemara drays a hakaf to try to figure out how to get that oil here. So the Gemara says you shouldn't carry the oil directly if you don't have to. You should try to bend over backwards to avoid doing it in a normal fashion. You should try to do a kiliach hayad, because every time you do a melacha kiliach hayad, by definition, it's only a derabbanan. Remember from the Shir HaGdama that we gave a couple of weeks ago? So anytime you do a melacha in an abnormal fashion, that by definition would only be a derabbanan. So the Gemara says, try to carry the oil in an abnormal fashion. So how do you do it? So the Gemara gives you a wild eitzah. The Gemara says, you should take the oil and put it in your hair. For those of us who I couldn't be helpful with that, for those who have hair. So you put it in your hair, and then you walk across the street. So carrying oil in your hair is not a deraisa. So now when you get across the street, so how are you going to get the oil out of your hair? So you got to wring out your hair, you got to squeeze out your hair. So the Gemara says, wait a second, how did you solve the problem deraisa? Isn't that a problem of schita? So the Gemara says, no, ain't schita b'seyam in a Torah. That would only be in the derabon. So it's better to do it derabon on the dashino, carrying kliyachayad, al-dreyakov, rather than carrying something mamash be a dime, which would be a deraisa. So the Gemara doesn't address the sanitary issues involved, the hygienic issues involved, and the squeezing out of the air. That's a different sugya now for now. But whatever it is, the Gemara says that's the way. That's the way to go. That's the ace. You have to bend over backwards rather than violate a deraisa, which would be feverish. So this is a big machlekes HaRishonim. What do you do with this Gemara? What conclusion can we draw from this Gemara? So it was the machlekes HaRishonim between the Rambam and the Ramban. So the Ramban wrote a sefer called Sefer Teres Adam. So in the Sefer Teres Adam of the Ramban, so the Ramban writes that this is the rule. This is the rule by all pikuach nefesh. It happens to be the case the Gemara was talking about was the Yoledes, but Yoledes is no different fundamentally than any other chedesh esh b'sekhana. And this is the guiding rule in Hilchos pikuach nefesh. That you have to try to do things if and when you're able to. Sometimes it's not shaya, sometimes it's not practical. Sometimes doing a kiliach hayad will cause more of a chashash of a sakon if you're going to delay. But heichad yefshel, when it's possible, so says the Ramban, you have to take the attitude, you have to try his best according to the Ramban. And the Rambam doesn't say that. The Rambam Chashabas assumes that when you're mechal Shabbos for a chedesh esh b'sekhana, you're not mechuyev to be mishana. So what does the Rambam do with this Gemara? So the Magid Mishnah on the Rambam points out that the Rambam clearly learned that this is not a din klali relating to all chaylim. This is a din prati relating dafka to yoledes. Manishtani yoledes from all other chaylim. So the Magid Mishnah explains that even though yoledes is pikuach nefesh, but it's a dove TV, it's a natural type of pikuach nefesh. Means women become pregnant, women have babies, women have birth. Every once in a while, chalila, chalila. Yeah, you have a situation of a woman who's in the state of pikuach nefesh during childbirth, but it's not considered to be something out of the ordinary. A person has a heart attack, chalila, that's out of the ordinary. That's a chayla, sheyesh b'sekhana kind of the highest level. So the Magid Mishnah explains that even though the halacha does equate a yoledes with other cholim, but it's not quite the same. It's not 100% equation. It's considered to be a type of a chola that we have to be more concerned to avoid pikuach nefesh, to avoid chol Shabbos if we're able to do so. But according to the Rambam, the guarding force in regular pikuach nefesh is, if you're a chayla, then do whatever you want. It's mamish begad hutra. Whether the Rambam holds this literally hutra is a little bit questionable, because the Rambam doesn't use the lashon hutra in another place in the Shabbos, but at least for our purposes, conceptually, the Rambam seems to be presenting pikuach nefesh short of the case of yoledes as a situation of hutra. So I'll call upon him. This very, very basic fundamental machlekes as to what he's supposed to do. We have a case of a chol shesh b'sakona. Are you supposed to be draining a cup to do things kiliach hayad, or just business as usual, do things like it's Tuesday? So that seems to be the end of the day, machlekes the Rambam and the Ramban, but even the Rambam would concede that you would have to be mishana. How do we paskin the halacha? So it's machlekes the mechaber and the Ramah. So the mechaber paskins, not surprising like the Rambam, that you're not mechuyif to be mishana, do things normally. And the Ramah says, no, but you are mechuyif to be mishana if you're able to. Sometimes being mishana is going to be counterproductive. Let's say, Lamashal, some Sfarim write some very strange things. They write that you have to drive to the hospital on Shabbos, so you should try to drive with the shinui. So try to put your foot on the wheel, whatever, put your hand on that. It's ridiculous. So of course you can't do that. So you're going to kill people along the way. So that's not going to be very productive. So let's say you have a surgeon. So a surgeon's got to do an open heart surgery, emergency open heart surgery on Shabbos. So you can tell him, try to hold the scalpel in your left hand instead of your right hand. You want to do this. So of course that's not what the Ramah's talking about. The Ramah's talking about cases where it's not going to be so good for you. It's not going to be such a big rush. You have to make a phone call. So you can make a phone call, assuming you don't have a grown-up phone, you can make a phone call in a normal way. You can make a phone call, so if it's not a question of seconds, it's a question, you have a little bit of time, so then you might as well make the phone call. That's what the Ramah would say to do. So it's my bottom line, it's my chlekes, the mechaber and the Ramah. We usually follow the Ramah, so our practice should be to try to be mishana. We're able to be mishana. We should try to be mishana, assuming that it doesn't interfere from a medical point of view. We had a funny application of the Shaila happened in Washington Heights on, this goes back about 13 years or so. I only remember it's 13 years because the boy who was born at the time just turned bar mitzvah recently. So his mother went into labor. They lived down the hall from us. So his mother went to labor on Friday night. So the guy came knocking on my door and asked me, you know, what am I supposed to do? I always like people come and ask, why bother asking Shalas in advance if you can wait till the last minute? So his wife was in her ninth month already. She just figured out she's probably going to have a baby, 1 in 7 chance to give me a Shalas. But whatever. So he came knocking on the door. He says, what should I do, Rabbi Soblowski? Where do I go? What do I do? What do I do? So I said to him, I said, okay, we've got to get you to the call doctor. We've got to call a camp for you. Okay, sure. Call Sam 1. They say 2 minutes. Okay, good. But all set. I one time had a call for an additional camp on Shabbos because one time somebody called the camp on Friday night for another case. And they didn't call Sam 1. They called Bennett Camp or something, and the guy's never showed up. So I told him, you got to call Sam 1. I said, that's pikuach nefesh because the other guy's never going to come. So call Sam 1. So they said, 2 minutes. And they came in 2 minutes. That's exactly like they always come. Anyway, so, getting back to the story. So this particular father-to-be, his friend, he wants to know, what do I do? How do I call them? So I said to him, I said, okay, so let's call Kaliyash with the Shinoi. So we'll do a call Kaliyachayad. So as I was about to help him make the phone call Kaliyachayad, so I said to him, wait a second. I said, you're a Sfardi. I said, Sfardim follow the Rabbam, the Fabaran HaMechaber. So the Shulchan Aruch says, you don't have to be Mishana. So I said, okay, you don't have to be Mishana. So as he's about to read, I said, wait. I said, this is Yoledes. This is the one case that even the Rambam can see, because this is the Gemara. So can you imagine, the woman standing there, and she's watching this give and take. This is the full fulfillment of what the Gemara says, Ashol HaRezah Shafech Damu. So you saw it. Anyway, so... with women in labor, so usually the rule is, I mean, unless there's something out of the ordinary, usually it's an emergency, but it's not a heart attack kind of emergency. There are different kinds of emergencies in halacha. There are heart attacks with every 7 counts, and then there are, you know, stitches in women, you know, broken bones in women in labor, you know, whatever, depending on the extent of the broken bones. Some broken bones can be mamish seconds, but whatever the case would be, this particular case didn't look like it was an emergency. Emergency looks like we had a little bit of time to play around with, so we were yesterday that dinner playing around a little bit, and we figured out what to do. Okay, good. Anyway. This machlekes, this conceptual machlekes, whether pikuach nefesh review is the chulya hutra, whether we review it as Tuesday, or whether it's Shabbos, so this is probably a source of another important machlekes to Rishon about the following question. There is a very, very big chiddush that appears in Magen Mishnah in Perek Beis Melucha Shabbos, where the Magen Mishnah claims as follows: that the yavah chodesh yesh pesakona, and the doctors say there is a certain course of treatment that he needs this injection, he needs this treatment, he needs the surgery, whatever it is, good. So whatever has to be done. And then the doctor said, "You know what? If his mother comes and cooks him up a bowl of chicken soup, he's going to feel much better. Is that going to make any difference in terms of his medical outcome? Absolutely not. I mean, his mother may not agree with, but medically we know there's not going to make a difference whatsoever. But if he would be on Tuesday, so we would cook him the chicken soup because that'll make him feel better, feel stronger, whatever the case may be. So the Magen Mishnah writes, you're allowed to do that in Shabbos. That Oisin Kol Tzorchi Achayla b'Shabbos, the Magen Mishnah writes, that klal of Oisin Kol Tzorchi Achayla includes even those tzorchim which are not pikuach nefesh proper. As long as the chayla is a chayla sheyesh b'sakona. If a guy stammers a sore throat, you want to cook chicken soup, you know, do that. But if he's a chayla sheyesh b'sakona, the guy has a heart attack, whatever, the guy's laying in the hospital, the guy's in a state of a chayla sheyesh b'sakona, so So you don't have to sit and measure every single tzarech to see, is this tzarech considered to be gufa because nefesh? Once apidin is labeled as a chayla, so then osin ko tzarech yachayla b'shabes. That's the Magi Mishnah in the Chiddush. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes this Magi Mishnah in the Bir HaBlocha, and he has serious, serious reservations about it. Mishnah Berurah says that he doesn't think that most of the Rishonim agree to this. He thinks, fakir, if you collect the Rishonim, look for the Rishonim, he doesn't think anybody really holds like this Magi Mishnah. This is a tremendous Chiddush. What's the root of the Machlekes, the Magi Mishnah, and the others? So this is probably the root of the Machlekes. According to the Magi Mishnah, if you're viewing Shabbos as Tuesday for the Chodesh Yesh Bersakona, so then whatever you would do on Tuesday, so if you cook chicken soup on Tuesday, you can cook chicken soup on Shabbos. It's not really Shabbos, legabei tzorchei achola. According to the other Rishonim, that pikuach nefesh is d'chuya, you have to count, you have to look at every single case, and now you have to measure and count and see, is it necessary, is it not necessary? Everything you do, you got to ask yourself, is this tzorich, is this not tzorich? Is the guy going to die, is he not going to die? Is this serious, is not serious? Is it just going to make him feel better, is this going to really help his medical condition? You have to mamash measure each case, because each case is a shah, and this is skila, you do things that are not necessary. So if you go with that route, then obviously you can't accept this like in Mishnah. So even according to the Magen Mishnah, let's say, according to the Magen Mishnah, if a guy laying in a hospital bed, and it's a Shabbos afternoon, and he's very bored, and he says, you know, there's this great football game on, and it's going to really make him feel good to watch a football game. So he's allowed to watch a football game, according to the Magen Mishnah. That's called Tzorech Yachola. I don't know, that sounds a little bit far-fetched, even according to the Magen Mishnah. So, some of these physical tzrachim that will at least help his health, his overall health, just something to make the guy feel a little bit cheerier, lav dafka, that would be good even according to the Magen Mishnah. So how do we paskin la locha? Do we accept this Magen Mishnah? So the Mishnah Berurah was not a big in favor of this. The Mishnah Berurah paskins against this Magen Mishnah. But Reb Chaim is supposedly said that we should accept this Magen Mishnah. Reb Chaim said in the following context. There's a famous psak of Reb Chaim floating around on all the Rabbanim know this from Yom Kippur time. That the simple reading of the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch is when you have a chayla and Yom Kippur, so you have to try to bend over backwards not to feed the chayla more than is necessary. Namely, you have to feed him pachas mikashir, if he's able to. There are different chayla have different needs. Sometimes many, many chayla who eat on Yom Kippur can get away with pachas mikashir and give him a little bit less than a kesevis at a time, a little bit less than a maluk, whatever this particular shiur of Yom Kippur are. You have to try to give him pachas mikashir within the time frame, etc., whatever the details of Hilchos Yom Kippur are. The simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch is that you have to do that as much as you can, unless the doctor says it's not going to help. If the doctor says this guy's got a specific condition that he's got to eat normally, then you have to eat normally. But if you're able to avoid eating normally, you should try to eat bachos mikashir. So Reb Chaim held that that din is not always true. Reb Chaim had a chiddush gadol. Reb Chaim said that that's only true when you have a person who's not yet a chayla sheish for sakana, but he potentially may become a very, very common child. You have an older person, let's say, who's susceptible to dehydration. So right now, they're not dehydrated. Right now, they're rolling. Right now, the guy's down for the yoga. The guy's screaming out, musaf. On the other hand, the guy's got a condition that by 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if he doesn't drink now, he may end up dehydrating. So Reb Chaim says, that's when the halacha says you have to feed him or him to drink bachos mikashir. If a guy's laying in a hospital bed, he's already a chayla sheish b'sakana. So says Reb Chaim, you don't have to play games and give him bachos mikashir. You can just give him food directly. You can let him eat whatever he wants, whatever he needs, whatever he wants to eat and drink. Everything is mutter according to Reb Chaim. Why should that be so? What's the basis for this psak of Reb Chaim? So the Brisker Rav quotes in his sefer that he had a tradition from his father. It's probably good authentic tradition. He said his father told him the pshat in his father's psak was that he held like the Magen Mishnah. The Reb Chaim held the Magen Mishnah. The Ikarom is right. That pikuach nefesh permits you to do kol tzorchei achayla. So just as in Uchah Shabbos you would be permitted to cook the soup because that's called normal tzorchei achayla. So too for on Yom Kippur you would be permitted to eat kedarkoi. That's considered to be normal tzorchei achayla. If this is the rationale for a Chaim's psak, then according to the Mishnah Berurah we cannot accept this psak. According to the Mishnah Berurah who undermined the very Magen Mishnah. Who said the Magen Mishnah was a das yoch that shouldn't be followed? So if you can't follow the Magen Mishnah in Hilchos Shabbos, you can't follow the corollary of the Magen Mishnah in Hilchos Yom Kippurim as well. So at the end of the day, it's machlekes apoyskim, machlekes Mishnah Berurah and Reb Chaim. The Mishnah Berurah held that on Yom Kippur you have to feed all the chayim and bachas b'kashir unless there's some unbelievable necessary medical need to feed them normally. And according to Reb Chaim, whenever you have a real chayla, so a real chayla, you're allowed to drink and eat in a normal fashion. you have to drain yourself a cup. Most of what I do, my wife knows, and most of what I do during Hashanah Shemetshuva is to try to figure out who's allowed to eat in Yom Kippur, who's not allowed to eat in Yom Kippur. So it's tough to be a rav during Hashanah Shemetshuva. I said, between the Pasachim Shilas and the eating on Yom Kippur Shilas, I don't have any time to do tshuva. As somebody once eloquently said, that we're so busy during Hashanah Shemetshuva saying slichas and trying to figure out whether you can eat cookies or not, who has time to do tshuva? So there's something wrong with that. You're supposed to try to figure out how to do tshuva during that time of the year also. Where Rabbanim have it even more difficult. Then all the people come to ask you to look at whether there's sukkahs under the branches or not. They think somehow I have Ruach HaKadosh to tell whether the sukkah is under the branch. I can't tell the same way they can't tell. So they don't teach me in smicha how to figure out whether it's under the branch. But anyway, getting back to the story. So we have a lot of people eating in our shul on Yom Kippur. We have a whole kiddush club in the back. We have an ashul, so we're an alcohol free shul all year long. So there's no alcohol, not even wine, nothing in the shul. So the only thing is we have a big bag of little schnapps glasses sitting in the kitchen. So everyone wonders, why do we have the big bag of schnapps glasses? They're not there for the whole year. They're there for one day of the year. They're there for Yom Kippur. Because the schnapps glasses are a little bit less than the shear of a Mali Lugma. So that's how we figure out. We have orange juice and grape juice, whatever's open in the back for people. Sometimes you have women who have complications of pregnancy and other things that have to eat and drink in Yom Kippur. We had a bris in Yom Kippur in Shul, not this year, 2 years ago. So the postman had a whole discussion about who should drink the wine when you have a bris and Yom Kippur. Do you give the baby the wine? Give a cup the wine? Yeah. So I could have picked 20 women in the back who could have easily drank the wine for the grape juice. Well, the grape juice for a kiddush, but whatever. I don't feel I wanted to embarrass anybody who was eating wasn't eating that year. Anyway, so we usually, many Rabbanim don't follow this Reb Chaim. Many Rabbanim have the tradition to follow the Mishnah Berurah that you try to be machal, pachas, pachas, b'kishir when at all possible. And there are some Rabbanim who follow this tradition of Reb Chaim that if you have a real chayla, someone who's already established to be chayla, many of our chaylam are not real chaylam yet. Many of our chaylam are potential chaylam that even Reb Chaim would agree to. But if you have a real established pre-existing chayla, so Reb Chaim would be making on the show.
They
have to follow.
Break any minute.
Right, accept this. Right. It says in the Ishalacha. Right. You have to follow this. Reb Chaim didn't tell me that.
Reb Chaim will be maker, or is that Mishnah Berurah will be maker?
No, Reb Chaim was the maker of the shal. He held it.
Yeah, so
if the person was already a chayla, the Reb Chaim held that you have to, you would be permitted to eat in a normal fashion. Yeah. But that's only the person's already chayla. Many of our chayla, most of our chayla today that we feed are not. If a guy's in the hospital, that's already chayla shefkana. Most of our chayla are people who have conditions that may become aggravated if they fast. So many of those, even according to Reb Chaim, would be required to eat up as well. Anyway, so we have at least a little bit of an introduction as to chayla sheyesh b'sakana, what we are not allowed to do for a chayla sheyesh b'sakana. Who is a chayla sheyesh b'sakana? So this is not a call that I'm going to make. This is a doctor's call. So the doctor's got to determine for us whether the guy is a chayla sheyesh b'sakana. If we don't know, if we don't have a doctor in shul, and it looks like it's some potential sakana, so vadi you have to do whatever you have to do. Suffek, pikuach nefesh. So a shul, a reza shafich damim. You don't have to sit around and philosophize whether he's pikuach nefesh. If a guy has some symptoms that indicate pikuach nefesh, about you have to act immediately. So there are certain standard situations that are obvious pikuach nefesh. Some of the more obvious ones, guys having a heart attack, guys can't breathe, guys choking around. There are certain things that are obvious pikuach nefesh. Then you have things that are a little bit less obvious pikuach nefesh, like broken bones. So it depends what kind of bones. Certain bones could potentially be pikuach nefesh. Guy breaks a leg, breaks an arm. So those kinds of breaks could cut arteries. Those could potentially be a very, very life, very serious life-threatening types of injuries. So sometimes if a person gets a serious wound, that could also be pikuach nefesh. So sometimes the wound has to get stitched up in order to prevent infection. So again, those are very, very, you have to check with the mumchim in the field to figure out what's considered to be pikuach nefesh. Sometimes a person has unexplained symptoms. It's like Rav Moshe has an achuva. A guy runs 102 fever, so that's called pikuach sheyesh b'sakana. Remember, once he asked the doctor about this, is that true? So the doctor said, it depends. So it depends what the case is. It says, if we know what he has, the guy's got flu around. The guy got strep, and he's on antibiotics, but he's got 102 fever still. So it's not a chodesh sheyesh b'sakana. Moshe Inkid, if you have a guy who may have less than 102, the guy has 101 fever, but he has very bizarre symptoms. The guy has dizziness in his stomach, whatever those symptoms are, and it could be something which is potentially life-threatening. Of course, that's pikuach nefesh. So it's hard to give objective criteria what's called pikuach nefesh or not. So it's a medical call, and in the lack of any medical expertise, so then everyone has to err, of course, on the side of caution in this area. So up until now we've been talking about the most serious type of chayla, that's the chayla she'ein b'sakana. Now we move on to a chayla she'ein b'sakana. So chayla she'ein b'sakana is, it's clear that one can cannot do any deraisa. That's absolutely out of the question. To violate a deraisa, no matter how uncomfortable the person is, no matter how much pain he's in, a chodesh emir sakana, no questions whatsoever, a deraisa can never be violated. However, certain derabbanans may be permitted to be violated for a chodesh ein by sakana. What derabbanans are permissible? So one, the Gemara says the Farish is mutter, is a merely akum. Merely akum is a low-level derabbanan because it doesn't involve a maisa of the Yisrael. It's just aydei dibur. So the Gemara calls that a shvus akal. So an merely akum is for sure mutter for a chodesh ein b'chletzah, a Farish Gemara in a few places. There was a big machlekes in Rishonim. What about other Yisurim Derabbanan? So some of you saw in the Maramakomos, there are basically four shittas in the Rishonim, or combinations of four shittas in Rishonim. Unclear what the Rambam said, but whatever it is, there are four basic shittas that appear in Shulchan Aruch about what are you permitted to do for a chodesh ein b'sekana. So some Rishonim held that you could do all Derabbanan. So really, Akam was just an example of all Derabbanan. And most of the Rishonim held that that's not true. Most of the Rishonim held that only certain derabbanans are permissible, depending on the level of the chayla. And we generally pass in as follows. We generally pass in that amir yakum is mutter for chayla she'en b'sakana, but regularly certain derabbanans are prohibited. So you can't just stop. It's not just a freebie. It's do whatever you want. Green light for chayla she'en b'sakana, do whatever you want. Only amir yakum is mutter, with another exception that the Ramban claims, based on his reading of some of the Gemaras, with the Hachzaras Unkelis and the Shvarim and all those 15,000 different cases that we're not sure what any of them are. But basically the Ramban develops the Yisayin in Teresa Adam that you're permitted to do things Kaliyachayad. Kaliyachayad is usually also like a lower level type of an Isar. So you're allowed to do things Kaliyachayad for a Chayla She'en B'Sekonim. So there's a big question, what exactly does the Ramban mean? We paskin the Loch like the Ramban. Shulchan Aruch paskin is like the Ramban. That you're allowed to do some derabbanans, i.e. the kliyachayad derabbanans, that you're permitted to do for chalash shem b'sekana. So what exactly does that mean? So if you look in the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch, the way this sheet is presented, it's presented as follows. If you have what's called a trade derabbanan, you have something which even if you would do it in a normal fashion, would only be derabbanan, and you go ahead and do it in an abnormal fashion, that's a derabbanan on a derabbanan, so for a chayla that would be permissible. Let's say, for example, to carry in an area that's not a Rishis Ram Dirais. It's only a Karmelis. It's only an area that's prohibited to carry Midrabanan. So stop to carry Midrabanan, so you have to get medicine for Chayla. Stop to carry through a Karmelis in a normal fashion, that would be a problem. Some Rishonim held that would be okay. All Dirabanans are Mutter, but we don't pass like that. We pass and you can put the medicine on your hat. You can put your medicine under your arm or something. You can carry whatever you need in an abnormal fashion. That would be okay. So Shulchan Aruch paskins, since carrying in a karmelis is only derabbanan, and you're doing it kiliyachayad, it's a double derabbanan. A double derabbanan is in effect mutter. If one of those derabbanans is a kiliyachayad, is mutter for chayla she'en b'sekana. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. So the problem with this kula is that if you look in the Ramban itself, in the Teres Adam, it seems very clear that it's not at all what the Ramban said. The reason why the Shulchan Aruch says it this way is, this is not some scholarly research of mine, the Shulchan Aruch didn't have a Teres Adam. Shulchan Aruch is quoting from a Torah, is quoting from someone else, is quoting from who. So the Shulchan Aruch himself didn't see the Teres Adam inside. So this is not my great modern-day discovery. The Eglei Tal already in the Sefer Nochah Shabbos came to this realization. The Eglei Tal writes that if you look at the original source of the Teres Adam, it's clear that that's not what he said. What the Ramban said was as follows, that you're allowed to do even deraisas kiliyachayat. The Shulchan Aruch said a very, very big chumrah in a sense. He took the chumradic understanding of the Shulchan Aruch, of the Ramban, that you're only allowed to do derabbanan kiliyachayat for a chayla. If you look at the Ramban said the Feirish, you're allowed to even do deraisas kiliyachayat. The raya from the Ramban, as we'll talk about a little bit more on Sunday, is from milking cows. Milking cows, according to most of the Rishonim, is a deraisa, including the Ramban, it's a deraisa. And the Ramban quotes a Gemara in Subas, and the Ramban interprets it to mean you're allowed to milk cows kaliyachayad if you need the milk for a chayla. So the Ramban's talking about mamish doing a deraisa kaliyachayad, not a derabbanan kaliyachayad. So according to what it really says in the Ramban, it's a tremendous kula that any deraisa you want to do, you want to carry your shisrab and mamish, just put it in your hat. You want to turn on a light, just do a kaliyachayad. Anything you want to do that's deraisa, as long as you do a kaliyachayad, that would be mutter for a chayla she'en b'sekana. That's quite a chiddush, quite a breakthrough. So how do we paskin? Do we paskin like the way the Shulchan Aruch presents the Ramban in a very, very limited sense, that only the Rabbanan is kiliyachayad mutter? Or do we paskin like the Ramban himself says, that even their Isis is kiliyachayad mutter? So this is a tricky one, depends on who you ask. So if you ask the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah was going with the Shulchan Aruch, somehow. So the Mishnah Berurah was for sure machmer in this. But the Shmir Shabbos Gilchasa quotes from Rishon Zalman, that Rishon Zalman was making on this. That it was made of b'shas al chach. It's always b'shas al shas al chach. Nobody's sick l'chadchila. So all the shas are shas al chach. So comes the Shlomo Zalman and says that if you have a situation where it's very difficult and you have a tzerchei achoyla, And the only way to take care of the chayla would be to do the araisa kiliyach hayad. So you're permitted to rely on what it says in the Ramban, like the Egwe Tal's reading of the Ramban, which is really, in a sense, the authentic reading of the Ramban. Others don't accept this. There are some poskim who have serious issues with this. I was once speaking over to a big paisek in Eretz Yisrael about this, and I was just telling over some shayla that had come to me. And in the middle of my discussion, I threw in the fact that, yeah, I was relying on the Egwe Tal's reading in the Ramban, and he stopped me dead in my tracks, and he says, "You were relying on what?" I said, "Yeah, the Egwe Tal's Ramban." He said, "Who possibly makes this Egwe Tal?" He said to me, "The Shulchan Aruch doesn't pass like this, the Mishnah Berurah doesn't pass like this. What do you pass like this Egwe Tal's reading in the Ramban?" So I didn't say anything. I just went back afterwards to go check that the Shmir Shabbos passed that way. So he quotes from Shulchan Zalman passed that way. So I don't know, whatever it was. So I didn't feel as bad. So I was on. Did we daven Shlomo Zalman last night? No, we daven Sherech Hesel last night, right? Okay, so the Shlomo Zalman wrote that the Ikra didn't want to rely on the Egwe Tal's reading in the Ramban. So anyway, whatever it is. So there are different opinions about this. So when I'm stuck on the Shasar Chach, I rely on this. So this is an important shayla. Yeah, this is very, very often you have these kinds of shaylas. You have all these tzorchei chalav which are not really chalash eish b'sakana. It's a chalash eim b'sakana. So I always tell people, if you can do raidei goy, if I can do raidei goy, that's the shayla. You have a goy in front of you, do raidei goy. But if you can't do raidei goy, so then meikra din, you can rely on the kula. You can even do a deraisa kaliachia. Very often, a lot of things that we do are going to be the Rabbanim anyway. Very often, they involve electricity, which touches on yesterday, Shia. It's a very, very common shayla. Nebulizer shayla is the most common shayla. If you live in a young community, a lot of young kids get the shayla every week. If kids have these coughs, and they want to put them on these nebulizers, and the kid wakes up in the middle of the night, he's having trouble breathing. I mean, not really trouble breathing. It's not pikuach nefesh necessarily, but he's very, very uncomfortable. So can you turn the nebulizer on for the kid on Shabbos? So, if you have a goy there, so if you should have the goy, you turn on the nebulizer, but at 2 o'clock in the morning, you wake up the goy, that's not going to happen. So the kid's coughing up a storm, he can't sleep, he can't sleep, you can't sleep, nobody can sleep, it's all a tzorche chayla. You're going out of your mind, you're a chalash yesh b'sakana, your wife's going to kill you, it's a father's gonna. So what's the din? So if you're stuck, you can rely to do these things, because again, turning on a lot of these electrical devices, I don't know, you have to look, each device is different, but many of the electrical devices are, may not be derisas, like we said yesterday, if you don't accept the chazanish, if you go with more of the sitzoks and the zambans and that mahalach, that a lot of these electrical devices which don't have lights are maybe only derabanans anyway, so if they're only derabanans, so then they will be mutter even according to the Shulchan Aruch HaYadei Shinui. So Kalva Chomer, that they'll be mutter according to the Egwe Tal HaYadei Shinui, even if they're derisas, they'll be mutter HaYadei Shinui. So if you do things, Kalechayad, and these kinds of things, there would be a lot of room to be made for Tzorche Cholish Ein Vesakona. You have this a lot in the hospitals also. You know, we're not Zorich in America to have Tzomet Institute to put in all these to grumble buttons or anything. A regular, normal guy laying in a hospital in Shabbos in the middle of Midtown Manhattan. So if there's a guy around, if there's a nurse around, so you call the nurse to help. If the nurse is nowhere around, the guy's very uncomfortable, he's in the bathroom, he can't get off the bed. So you can press the button, kiliyachayat. So if you press the button, kiliyachayat. So what's silver for Elach? What's going to happen? So even naniach, the electricity is there, I see. Even the worst case scenario that there's electric electricity with the raisa. Even if that's true, but it's still going to be kiliyachayat. So according to the Egwe Tal, it's still going to be mutter. And it's quite possible the whole electricity issue is only the Rabbanan. So it's only the Rabbanan. So that even according to the Shulchan Aruch, it's going to be mutter kiliyachayat. Assuming that this is all considered to be kiliyachayat, Rav Moshe throws a curveball into kiliyachayat by suggesting that maybe when you turn on lights with the elbow, that's not called kiliyachayat. Because the light goes on the same way. So there's no shini in the light. It's the same light. So what does it matter that you did it with your elbow? So there's another Egwe Tal that disagrees with that. Egwe Tal is the whole shtickle term about kiliyachayat. But there are two dinner with kiliyachayat. Egwe Tal was a chassidisha. This is a very brisk report that he has. There's a din of kiliyachayat in the Peruvah, there's a din of kiliyachayat in the Gavra, one's a din of Shabbos, one's a din of Shabbos. A very fancy razzle dazzle shtickle term beyond the scope right now. Maybe for some long bus ride that we run out of what to talk about. But anyway, assuming that those things are kiliyachayat, so then kiliyachayat would help you significantly in this area. Who qualifies as a chalash eim b'sakana in order to do these kinds of things? So not everybody, not every ache pain is a chalash eim b'sakana. You have to be a specific category of chalash eim b'sakana. So usually the term chalash eim b'sakana is used synonymous with another term called nafal amishkav. Nafal amishkav is usually the litmus test, whether the person is really that degree of being a chalash, so sick, so miserable, got to lay in bed, that's usually called the chayla she'ein b'sakana. There are certain people who are objectively chaylam she'ein b'sakana, that even though they're not necessarily in bed, we assume that they have the status of a chayla she'ein b'sakana. So one of them is a woman within 30 days after childbirth. So right after childbirth, she's still a chayla she'ein b'sakana. It's a question to when, 3 days, 7 days, I'll see you in the Gemara. But for the first month after childbirth, she's labeled as a chayla she'ein b'sakana. So you would be permitted to do certain things, whatever, whatever things you're allowed to do for a chayla she'ein b'sakana would be mutter for such a woman. Where children are considered to be chayla she'ein b'sakana, tzarchei of ketanim, it's a question, how old ketanim? A ketanim for this, that's unclear exactly how old they are. Depends on the child, you know, the kid who's prone to getting sick all the time, let's say, those who have little kids in the house, no. So we usually have a 2 or 3 trips to the pediatrician a week, so those are the good weeks. So when you have kids who are, always getting cold, always getting strep, always getting ear infections, always getting everything, so those are considered to be like chayla she'ein by sakana. So whatever is necessary for the kid, you would be permitted to do whatever the guidelines are. It's a very common shaila that you have to take care of babies. So when a baby in child, the baby's got a diaper rash. So the diaper rash is usually not going to be a chayla she'ein b'sakana, but a chayla she'ein b'sakana, the baby's going to be very uncomfortable. So what can you do to take care of the baby? So if you want to put on creams or something, so putting on diaper creams, maybe a shaila deraisa, maybe a serious shaila. So if you have a goy, you should babysit a goy, your neighbor could do a few matoy. If not, so then you could do a kiliachayad. There are different ways of doing a kiliachayad. Again, different tzorchayad. Tanim could be done kiliachayad. Again, on derabonis for sure, and maybe even on deraisas according to the Mekilah.
How do we define
chol
she'ein
b'sakana? So usually it's nafal nishkov. The guy's sick enough that he has to lay in bed. And there are certain people who are objectively called the chayla she'ein b'sakana.
With a headache or something.
Depends how bad the headache is. If the headache's so bad, the imam knocks into bed, that's chayla she'ein
b'sakana. And by chayla she'ein b'sakana, it only can be things that are
tzarchei ha'kolah. Yeah. Well, so if the food is necessary, making it feel better, that would be also.
Maybe you can't say a
hutra
thing before
that. Maybe that hutra also. Yeah, it's a chiddush of the Maharam in Rittenberg, where the Maharam in Rittenberg says, it's not such a chiddush it is, it's the Maharam Pshutim, but he put it into halachic formulation. It's basically, he formulated in halachic terms what people say colloquially, an ounce of prevention is worth more than a pound of cure. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that's the phrase. So the Maharam in Rittenberg said, if madach kavachon, you're allowed to take care of a chiddush eimer sakana, to do certain derabbanans, miliach, whatever they are, so what about to prevent the person from getting sick in the first place? So avadi, you're allowed to do those things. So says the Maharam Rutenberg, we all know, anyone learn Daf Yomi these days? No one's learned Daf Yomi. Today's Daf. HaKobi Deshman Chutz B'Tzidim Pachim. So the Gemara says that people get sick from being out in the cold. So even though there's a big machlokes about this and the doctors, the latest study of the New England Journal of Medicine is that that's a bugmaisa, that you don't get sick from the cold, you get sick from bacteria, from germs, whatever. But the Machmirim, the other side, held that machlokes and the doctors, that's true that you don't get sick from the cold, but the cold sometimes can knock down your resistance, can make your body weaker, and perhaps you're more susceptible to certain germs that your body may have been able to fight off otherwise, so may not be able to fight off. So if you go into a very cold area and there are no germs whatsoever, you're not going to get sick. Not like your grandmother told you, you're going to catch pneumonia from going into the street when it's cold. That's not true. But you may, if you were already exposed to pneumonia, your body may not be able to fight off as well if your body was cold. That's the whole big, major, major deal. So nafkamin ladina, I ask the doctors this all the time on sukkahs. When it gets very cold, so it's always a challenge. I sleep in the sukkah. Forget about mitzvah. So mitzvah, you put in a few more blankets at mitzvah, but I'm afraid I'm going to get sick because I'm breathing in the cold air. So is that really true? So a chayla is planted from the sukkah. So to prevent yourself from, you're not mechuyev to get sick, to sleep in the sukkah. So I always ask the doctor, it's the same story. Is it really true that when it's 35 degrees outside, you're more prone to getting bronchitis? So the doctors always tell me the same thing. No, it's not true. It's the bubble mice. It's not true. If you're exposed to the germ, you get it. You're not exposed to the germ, you're not going to get it. It's all not true. I listen to them all the time, and then the week after sukkah, every day I still got bronchitis. It's the same story. It's mechuyev, my grandmother and the doctors, and my grandmother's always right. Anyway, so, dramatized a little bit. So getting back to the story, so the Maharam Rutenberg says that let's say a guy's afraid he's going to get sick, he's going to be in such a cold place, so you're not, so you don't have to wait till you get sick to rely on the head of a Mir Yachum. Why don't you jump the gun and rely on the Mir Yachum to prevent yourself from getting sick? So the Maharam Rutenberg said that let's say your house is very cold on Friday night and you need more logs into the fire, so you're allowed to go outside and ask a guy to go throw some more wood into the fire. It's der ice, it's havara. That's hasnei boer boesh. It's the mamish, the real thing, the real mekoy. So it doesn't matter. Amil Yaakov is mutter for a chayla, and the Maram Rutherford says that why wait till you become a chayla? You can prevent the chol. He is also considered to be mutter. That was the famous kula of the Maram Rutherford.
That mean if you have like a manual thermostat, that you could.
Oh.
If it's on already, if the heat's on already, you could turn it up because of that.
Well, I didn't say you could do it. I said you could have a goy do it. I said Amil Yaakov would be mutter for makom chol. Let's say the man of the application say you didn't turn the heat on, the heat's on too low, or it's in the summer, your air conditioning's on too high, whatever it is. It's something that you're afraid people are going to get sick from, especially the children around. So according to the Ram Rutherford, whatever you would be permitted to do, ayadei goy, or whatever, the shinui, whatever it is, I'm not advocating turning thermostats on with shinui, but you get a goy for these things. So in Ochadam, you're allowed to have a goy. Go ahead and turn up the heat, or turn down the air conditioning, etc. We had this in Shul a couple of years ago in Yom Kippur. We set the air conditioning in Mashit and Yom Kippur, as you said it. Set the temperature as low as you can in Yom Kippur, and then it's always better to be colder than hotter in Yom Kippur. If you're cold, you're putting it on the jacket. If you're hot, so then you can't take off your towels and the kid will get very uncomfortable. So one year in Yom Kippur, we set the air conditioning really, really geschmack, and I noticed that a few guys went home, the break guys came back. I noticed after the Ila, I kid you not, one guy took off his kittel. Under his kittel, he had like a sweatshirt. And then he was wearing gloves. He had a scarf, a guy from a parker, a guy was in the middle of the North Pole. But I thought it was great. I was still sweating. It's part of my Rebbe. I got that Masora from Rebbe Willie, the air conditioning. Anyway, so, but one year, Zach and Yom Kippur, the air conditioning was very, very, it was very, very cold. And we had to have a go and turn it lower. So, it's mutter. So you're allowed to have a goy come in and turn it. It would be mutter for shul for other reasons. Makom tzar, shvus to shvus, makom mitzvah, whatever. There may be other reasons why it would be mutter in makom rabim. But over here, when it's a makom of cold, people are so uncomfortable, afraid people are going to get sick. So then that would be mutter based on the kula of the ma'arav. These things I did.
You guys
can
like in your visa, you can say.
No, mikra din you can do it straight. Mikra din you can do it straight. Your remiza, whatever you're not allowed to do with a goy, you're not allowed to do remiza either. There are certain kinds of remizah that are mutter, shlo b'derech tzivui, without a malacha, those are certain other kulas, but when a merely yakum is mutter, so.
What's the reason why we should stay away from kalachriyat?
I don't know, it's just, you're right, enoch and ha'am, mikra din, it would really be mutter, I don't know, I'm just a little nervous. It's not time people to stop playing with you, I understand.
But,
you know,
but like, meaning, there's
machlokas
in terms of
how
to understand, like,
maybe because we're not so sure about this Maharam is Manazah, maybe we're not so sure about the whole metal, a lot of things are just a little nervous.
Goy's not good, but Kotlin is better?
I don't like doing things like that, Katanim. I think it's poor. First of all, to have a cut and do things via diet view, that's in a Siddur Aisa, that's the Aseret Siddur Aisa, Sasa Kamalacha, that's why I'm called Shabbos Siddur Aisa. This is the famous Maaser Reb Chaim with the wine that like we learned yesterday about the Cholent oven, right? The Vegas oven. So there used to be an Erev and Bris. Contrary to what they tell you, but there was an Erev and Bris. And Reb Chaim was the Rav and Bris. And Reb Chaim, one Shabbos, the Erev fell down. So Reb Chaim went to sit by the Vegas oven because people would come to pick up the Cholent. So he was stood there and told everyone they can eat the Cholent inside the oven, but they can't bring it outside because there's no Erev. So one woman came with a little daughter on the Bas Mitzvah. And Reb Chaim told you can't carry the children. So the woman said, "That's right, I won't carry it. My daughter's going to carry it." So Reb Chaim said, "No, you can't have your daughter carrying it because the din is whatever you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to have the cotton do for you on Shabbos." So the woman said, come on, it's fine. So she gave the children to her daughter to carry. So Reb Chaim sent the Shabbos back to the woman's house. Go tell your husband to throw out all the wine in the house because your wife is a Makal Shabbos for Hesya and the wine is all terif. So when I heard that story, so I was wondering, I said, what does that mean? Is that really true of Yaloch? That story, is that just some bubumaisa? So years later, I saw in the Achiezer from Chaim Oizer. Chaim Oizer speaks about a shayla. All the Achiezer talk about a shayla. What is the pasuk under Rabban Shalom? Kakash under Rabban Shalom. Why does the Rabban Shalom write in the Torah, lo sasa kom locha ato uvincha vitecha? Vincha vitecha means katar. It doesn't mean gedolim. Gedolim, gorozal al duzom locha. That's ato. So obviously, vincha vitecha means katar. So kash under Rabban Shalom. Why did Rabban Shalom have to write, you're not allowed to do malacha ayudei katanim? But don't we know the sugi nivamus kufi dalad? The Gemara says that's a din mekol tarakula. I'm not allowed to feed treifus to my kid. I'm not allowed to be safidul biadayim, any aveira to my child. So why do you need a special pasuk? I'm not allowed to bring a klein katan into the base of kvaras. So why do you need a special pasuk by the aseres adibris? What's the chiddush of inchil Shabbos? So that's a question all the achvarim are talking about. So Reb Chaim Oizer quotes in his tshuva, he quotes, he heard Shamati b'shem Reb Chaim Brisker, that Reb Chaim Brisker said, the answer to this kash is as follows. that in all other areas of halacha, it's an issur klali to be to cause a kohen to do an avera. But in chil Shabbos, it's a chiddush haTorah that it's called an act of chil Shabbos. It's not just an issur bialma. It's called a din prati. It's an issur prati called chil Shabbos. So I saw that answer from a quote from Rav Chaim. Then I understood the story. I said, if the nature of the din of to be machel be a dying would just be a general reserve that wouldn't carry with it the status of Chol Shabbos for Hesia. It's Reb Chaim's story, is Reb Chaim Lashitasai. So you have to put together Reb Chaim Maisa with a Reb Chaim Moise, Shtipel Torah, when you heard from Reb Chaim Briska, and you realize that those two stories go Lashitasai. That's just my own tidbit of information. Okay, anyway, getting back to the story. So, what are we talking about? You shouldn't dump constant things. It's not a good idea. First of all, if it's Mamash Asa, you can't tell a kata. And even if it's not Mamash Asa, it's something that's Be'al-Chinuch, it's not the greatest thing to do. I don't know, you have to weigh and figure out how Be'al-Chinuch is going to be. Yeah, figure it out. But to tell time to do things Be'adayim, Mamash Be'adayim, that would be a very, very serious problem. So we know certain things that are permitted to be done for a Chol Hashem B'Sakana. We know certain people who qualify as a Chol Hashem B'Sakana. Then you have a third category of Cholim, who's not even quite a Cholim. He's just called a Michash B'Alma. A Michash B'Alma means the guy's a little bit uncomfortable. The guy's got the sniffles, guy's got a headache, the allergies, you know, certain things are bothering him. So the place can write that's not even a Chol Hashem B'Sakana. And you're not allowed to do anything for this Michash B'Alma. So that's most of our, you know, general aches and pains that we have all the time. So those things are usually mechushim bi'alma, and those would be problematic. We assume that that pregnant women usually fall into the category of just a mechush bi'alma. A pregnant woman is not even a chayla she'en ber sakana. She's just uncomfortable. That's a mechush bi'alma, unless there's a complication in the pregnancy. Sometimes it could be so complicated that it's a chayla she'en ber sakana. Sometimes it's chayla she'en ber sakana. But most standard normal pregnancy is not even a status of a chol. That's the reason why the Gemara tells us in Tochim that women are obligated when they're pregnant to fast on Yom Kippur as well as on Tisha B'Av. That's the din in the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch. The Kedosh Shem Asanos and Mashlimus B'Yom Kippur and Asanos and Mashlimus B'Tisha B'Av. Pregnant women have to fast on both. The reason being, someone who's a chol she'ein by sakana doesn't have to fast on Tisha B'Av. It's the Tzach of Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says if a woman gave birth within 30 days of Tisha B'Av, she does not have to fast on Tisha B'Av. My wife gave birth. Mary Yaakov was born in Zion Av, so my wife didn't fast that year on Tishbav. Could be, even if it would have been Yom Kippur, maybe she wouldn't have had a fast in 3 days, whatever. But within 30 days, you don't have to fast on Tishbav, that's the Iker Adin. But pregnant women do have to fast on Yom Kippur and Tishbav, because even though a Cholosh Ein B'Sakana doesn't fast, a pregnant woman is not even a Cholosh Ein B'Sakana. So there's a big issue with pregnant women, Bizman Hazeh, about fasting. We can blame it on Shari Tzedek Hospital. We'll see today, maybe we can talk to them about it, is that there was a study that was done 20 years ago or so about they were wondering why is it that the day after Yom Kippur more women are giving birth than any other day of the year. So somebody came with this great theory, and they actually tested it out, and there was some truth to it, that apparently fasting lowers your fluid in your body, and apparently a woman towards the end of pregnancy, so lowering the fluid may trigger early contractions. So that's the study that was done in Shari Tzedek, and it's in fact written in regular medical textbooks. So if you're reading what to expect when you're expecting the Bible of anyone who's having a baby. So in that, the book is actually quoted as the official Shari Tzedek study from the State of Israel about fasting bringing on contractions. So this is a big issue that we have today with doctors and Rabbanim to try to get to figure out what's going on over here. So, you know, doctors are very, very weary to tell pregnant women to fast in general, bisman hazeh. So you have to figure out what the case is. It's somewhat of a case-by-case basis. Some women should not be fasting on Yom Kippur. Some women are perfectly okay to fast on Yom Kippur. Sometimes some women should be fasting on Yom Kippur. Maybe should not be fasting on Tisha B'Av. Some people should be fasting on everything. So again, you have to take case-by-case with the rabbanim and the doctors to try to get a real, authentic answer out of this. You know, usually when I present the shaila, so I want to know, is there something unique about the situation? Or is this just the doctor's general caution that the women, no pregnant women should be fasting? So that you have to figure out what to do with those kinds of situations. It's a little bit tricky.
What about the baby itself in terms of the day of no food?
Absolutely, nothing happened to the baby. Baby's doing just great, unless the woman goes into early labor. Okay.
What about in terms of the use of medications? Not like Advil or Tylenol, it's like morphine for a college ambulance versus a college age.
A chol she'ein bo sakana, you could use pain medication also. That would be okay for chol she'ein bo sakana. That would be fine. If necessary, it helps. So anyway, get back to the story. So anyway,
even if it's not for a food, even though it's not for
pain is part of, yeah, that's part of the treatment of the person. Yeah. So if you have someone who's just a michosh bialba, so basically none of these schools apply to. Not only do none of these schools apply, but there's an additional issur derabbanan that was instituted for a michosh bialba, and that's the issur about taking medicine in general. So take medicine, if you want to finish this, is the favorite, is an issur derabbanan to take all kind of medication and shams and yotif. As examish shchikas samamana, we're afraid you may come to grind up the herbs, which was the normal way of making medicine. So even though we haven't made medicine that way for a couple of years, so although there was one suggestion given by Reb Chaim Noach that maybe this whole issue doesn't apply to Zman Hazeh, the consensus of the Poskim was not this way. Reb Chaim Noach himself tilts about this, but the consensus of the Poskim is that this issue is still only been claimed today, that we do not take medicine on Shabbos and Yom Tov under normal circumstances, unless the person meets the criteria of being a chayla. So here also, they have to be a chayla she'ein b'sakana for this. If the person is just a michush bialma, then it would be a problem. So the guy's got a little headache, a little stomach, a little allergy problem, one would not be permitted to take medicine under those circumstances. There are certain exceptions to this rule. There are certain people who are permitted to take medicine on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even if they're not technically a chayla she'ein b'sakana. But one exception to the rule is if a person is on a type of medication where they began the medication from before Shabbos, and the stopping of the medication will interfere with the treatment, will throw the treatment back. So let's say, for example, allergy pills. So if you take an allergy pill on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and you don't take it on Shabbos, you're not going to get worse. You're just going to be miserable. When you take the pill on Sunday, so the body took up from Sunday on, it doesn't throw your treatment back if you miss an allergy pill. Or a guy's got a headache, so he doesn't take his Tylenol and Shabbos, and he'll feel miserable on Shabbos. But when he comes, he'll take his Tylenol. But let's say a person has antibiotic. If you don't take antibiotic for the whole day, so that's going to throw your treatment back. Because the way antibiotic works is that it kills. This is a very unprofessional presentation, but this is basically what happens, is that you got a lot of bacteria floating around your body. So comes the antibiotic, it starts to kill the bacteria. So it kills the weakest bacteria. They're the first ones to go down the fight. But there are still the stronger ones left. So after a day or two, you start to feel better because the number of bacteria is starting going down. Your body's reacting better. What happens? You still got the stronger troops are still around. So the guy, after 2-3 days, figures, I feel all great. Why don't I take the antibiotic anymore? And what happens? He stops taking it. And then all those strong, the strong bacteria, which were originally not affected by the antibiotic, so they fulfill the bracha of Pashas Bracious, Pruvu, Milos, Arts. They start to multiply, and their children, their grandchildren, they're all the stronger bacteria. So now, instead of having a strep throat with Shvacher bacteria, he's got a strep throat with Gesunder bacteria. So, no pun intended on the word gesund. So now, the guy feels worse than he did before, which is usually what happens. So if you're ever lucky enough not to listen to the doctor and not finish your antibiotic, you will probably get sicker than you were beforehand. I had this once, a Talmud of mine, we were learning Shabbos that year, and I said that you have to take the antibiotic on Shabbos. And then so a couple of weeks later, the guy disappears, missed shiur for a few days, comes back, he says, he's so sorry, he just had bronchitis. I said, I'm good. 2 weeks later, he missed shiur again for another week. So what happened? He said, I had bronchitis a second time. I said, well, how did you have bronchitis a second time? He said, because the doctor told me, I only took the antibiotic for 2 days, I felt better, I stopped taking, I got worse. So I said, shaita. I didn't say shaita, but I said shaita. I said, not only did you not listen to the doctor, you failed the bechina also, because that was one of the questions on the bechina. I said, you're allowed to take antibiotic in Shabbos because of the svara that your person's going to get worse. So it really happens in the real world. There is a connection between Torah and what really goes on in the world. So you're allowed to take these kinds of medication. The person has some chronic condition or something, guy's heart medication, blood pressure medication, those kinds of things. Of course, you're allowed to take those kinds of things on Shabbos. If a guy has the thyroid medication or something, so it depends what it is. Ask his doctor. So many people do is they take it. I usually take my thyroid medication in the evenings instead of in the morning. So that way I take it Friday afternoon right before Shabbos. Take what's on Shabbos. And if you have the Shabbos and you don't do back to back. So you miss a day. So depends on the case. If a person has some very serious thyroid condition, you can't miss a day. Case, that's a different story. That's a regular 97% of Americans on thyroid medication. So most people, nothing happens if you miss a day or two here and there. I said this in a couple of weeks ago in a shiur, so some guy came running up to me and said, how can you say you missed the thyroid medication? It's terrible. I said, okay, ask your doctor. If your doctor tells you that you can't miss it, you can't miss it.
Why don't we say that Oneg overrides the Derevana?
Because there is no such klal in Halacha. There was such a klal. Oneg Shabbos is not Doich Surim Derevana. I said that Oneg Shabbos is, I just said it because of what we heard yesterday. Yes, I don't think there is no such klal. There's no such Halacha at all. Oneg Shabbos is a Makom Mitzvah, so certain Makom Mitzvahs, Chazal lifted certain Yisurim Derevana from Makom Mitzvah. So Amir Yaakov, there's one day in Rishayim that says Amir Yaakov is Mutter Makom Mitzvah. So we don't really pass it like that. The Baal Itashita. We try to rule not to rely on that. Stam to say, that's not true. As we gave him Moshe yesterday, if the only chauffeur in town is on top of the tree, you're not allowed to climb the tree, and you don't have to forget the chauffeur. So you see, even Tekiah Shofar, Tekiah Shofar is more important than Erech Shabbos. And Tekiah Shofar wasn't lifted from Makom Yisum Drabbanan. So there's no such clause. Erech Shabbos is an important mitzvah. We're all for Erech Shabbos. We'll have a nice tish on Friday night. We'll talk about Erech Shabbos. But it's one of many factors in determining halacha. It's not an end all with everything. Okay, at least we try to give a little bit of an overview as to some of the halachas in Erech Shabbos.
Okay, we're eating lunch now. Guys who